This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. From The Last of the Mohicans to Dirty Dancing to Days of Thunder, movies made in North Carolina have gone on to great box office success. Question is, why make films here? I mean, the sandy beaches and majestic mountains are part of the reason that the Tar Heel State is one of the premier places to make films. And today, in Movies on the Radio, we will take a look at some of your favorite films made right here in North Carolina. Marcia Gordon's a film professor at North Carolina State University. Welcome back, Marcia. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us, Laura Boys, film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art. Hello, Laura. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
So, North Carolina, it is big. It's a big state.
It is.
They make a lot of movies here. The bigness we had nothing to do with, but why make movies here?
Well, actually, it's interesting that you invoked landscape because one of the reasons film production went to California at the beginning of the 20th century was for the diverse landscape, mountains, beach, good weather, things like that. And North Carolina actually has an analogous landscape. We just don't have the desert that California has. So certainly that's one of the reasons. And the second reason is that the state and people working in it have worked really hard to create an infrastructure to train people to work in production, to have studios and post-production, and to really invest in an infrastructure that allows production to happen here.
Go ahead.
Yes,
yeah.
Dino De Laurentiis came to Wilmington with originally with Firestarter, starring little Drew Barrymore, and created what we know as the North Carolina film industry today.
Not only did Drew Barrymore make her name here in North Carolina, but another great star, Oprah Winfrey, owes absolutely everything. Did you know that?
I do now.
Well, it's not quite true. But anyway, she did star in the film The Color Purple, a film made in North Carolina.
You told Harpo to beat me. All my life I had to fight. I had to fight my daddy. I had to fight my uncles. I had to fight my brothers. Girl child ain't safe in a family man, sir. But I ain't never thought I had to fight in my own house. I loves Harpo. God knows I do. But I kill him dead before I let him beat.
There you go, a clip from The Color Purple, a film made right here in North Carolina, and we're focusing on that today on Movies on the Radio. That's a fairly popular film. A lot of people know about it, though not a lot of folks know that it was made in North Carolina. One that may be less well known is the film Blue Velvet, Dream Scene. Let's listen.
I had a dream. In the dream, there was our world, and the world was dark. Because there weren't any robins. And the robins represented love. And for the longest time, there was just this darkness. And all of a sudden, thousands of robins were set free. And they flew down and brought this blinding light of love. And it seemed like that love would be the only thing that would make any difference.
Here's a clip from the David Lynch film Blue Velvet, filmed here in North Carolina. Laura?
And this also highlights another aspect of North Carolina film production is that Blue Velvet is such a cult film that people come to Wilmington to see the locations that the film was made. And at various times, there have even been Blue Velvet tours where there is a guided tour that will take you so that you can relive the excitement of all of the locations of Blue Velvet.
Yeah, I think it's really important. When
they
you
lock
think-
you in a closet? Do they lock you in a closet? Do you think?
I haven't done the tour, but I think it's highly unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
There is a car ride. But I think one of the ancillary benefits to the state of encouraging production is the touristic aspect of the film industry, which is that people love movies, they love particular movies, and they are willing to go out of their way to actually see the places where things were shot. And I think it's a very important part of the tourist driver for a state.
And lest you think we're oblivious, we know that a big part of that has been film incentives, the incentives for the film industry, which have been lost. And we know right now that, in fact, the film industry is leaving the state. We're going to talk more about that with some some of the filmmakers who have been here. But, you know, clearly that's been an important part of the film industry. We know that because they're now leaving.
Right. Absolutely. And I was just having a conversation with someone who runs a prop house in California who was – and California recently passed really significant tax incentives for film production. And film production is returning in droves to that state, and it is unfortunately leaving in droves from the state for 2015.
Yeah, what did he tell you? Prop director told you in terms of it's increments?
It's like tenfold. It's a dramatic difference in film production, and it is completely attributable directly to those tax incentives.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that as our program continues, but we conducted a poll, as we usually do, to talk about films related to the subject today, films made in North Carolina. And we initially inadvertently omitted Dirty Dancing from our list. Big mistake. Big mistake. I mean, we heard from more people loud and clear that this was among their favorites.
This is Alex Orr. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. I chose Dirty Dancing, filmed in Lake Lure, North Carolina. This was a pick that was not originally on the NPR survey that I had to write in, which was surprising to me. It's just such an iconic film for my generation growing up in the 80s in Western North Carolina. It touches on great social themes, and it's just a fun movie to watch, especially post-breakup.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Sorry about the disruption, folks, but I always do the last dance of the season. But this year, somebody told me not to. So I'm going to do my kind of dancing with a great partner who's not only a terrific dancer, but somebody who's taught me that there are people willing to stand up for other people no matter what it costs them. Somebody who's taught me about the kind of person I want to be. Miss Frances Hausman.
So remember, NPR, nobody puts baby in a corner.
We made a mistake.
Well, you know, when you watch this movie as a young person, it's so romantic and thrilling watching her step out of herself and defy her parents. But I have to say, as a parent, when you see it again, it's super creepy that somebody as old as Patrick Swayze is wooing your 16-year-old daughter. And it's one of those movies that becomes a different experience depending on what side of the age divide you are on.
And this is one of the films, I'll be actually introducing this film at the North Carolina Museum of History as part of, they're doing a monthly film series on the second Friday of every month to do films that were made in North Carolina as part of the exhibition. And what I like about what the caller said, besides the fact that he corrected an egregious wrong, was that it invoked this sense of place in North Carolina for him. And it's, I think, really different when you live in a part of the state who has experienced production, especially of a film that's such a big film like this, or, you know, in a different way, Blue Velvet, both kind of classics of the 80s in different ways. It really, it has this resonance that has to do with your sense of the state and of a kind of state pride that that is really different than if you are coming as a tourist and experiencing the state.
And I went to a wedding at the Lake Lure Inn, and they certainly play up the association quite a bit. And it does give you a little thrill that it is a location of romance and that the Lake Lure Inn is so sensitive to the fact that people are coming to have kind of a cinematic experience when they go there.
Another film that is very particular to North Carolina is the film Bull Durham. Your choice, Laura.
Yes, I absolutely love Bull Durham, in part because I was an extra for a day in the film.
I remember that role.
I sat in the stands and we watched Kevin Costner try desperately to catch pop fouls for several hours one afternoon. And no, I've never seen myself in it.
Well, where are you going?
After 12 years in the minor leagues, I don't try out. Besides, I don't believe in quantum physics when it comes to matters of the heart.
What do you believe in then?
Well, I believe in the soul. The small of a woman's back, The Hanging Curveball, High Fiber, Good Scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. Good night.
Oh, my. Crash.
Hey, Annie, what's all this molecule stuff?
Crash. Crash, wait. Look, all I want is a date. I'm not going to fall in love with you or nothing.
I'm not interested in the woman who's interested in that boy. Good night.
Here we go. Clip from the film Bull Durham, Laura Boy's favorite, or at least among them, when we're talking about films made in the state of North Carolina. What'd you like about that?
Well, for one thing, it shows Durham at a very specific moment in history before it became cool. And when you see it now, you realized what Durham used to be like, that it was a place that did not seem like it had a lot of vibrancy or energy. And you can go back to the old Durham Bulls ballpark and smell those overflowing restrooms that we used to have to use when we went to a game there. And this is another aspect of film production in a very specific place, is that it unknowingly documents a place. And even a terrible, terrible, terrible movie that nobody is ever going to see, which was filmed in Durham a few years ago, Main Street with Colin Firth. Some of the worst Southern accents you will ever hear. A terrible, terrible plot. But there is film footage inside the old Liberty Warehouse, which is now a pile of rubble across from the farmer's market. And that's probably the only film that was ever shot inside that building. So it makes it a valuable document in spite of the quality of the film.
Yep. Still no reason to see that film, but I take your point. Laura Boy is film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Marcia Gordon's with us, film professor at NC State. More movies on the radio just ahead on The State of Things from North Carolina. Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, talking about films shot in North Carolina with film experts Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon. And, you know, blockbusters are not the only films made here. Moving Midway, a film in 2007, a documentary by Godfrey Cheshire. I spoke with him earlier, and I asked him what it was like to make a film about something so personal.
Well, it's a challenge to do a film that's very personal, that's about your family. There are all sorts of minefields that one can step into. I probably, if I'd thought really carefully about it before I started, I might not have done it. I sort of just made a decision and plunged ahead and then realized later how many tricky areas I was treading into.
Why did you decide to make the film?
Well, the thing is that Midway Plantation has always been sort of a very special place for our family. I mean, there's so much family history there, and there's a lot of feeling in the family about the place. There always has been, as sort of a center of our you know, collective existence. And so when my cousin Charlie Silver and his wife Dina told me a few years ago that they were thinking about uprooting all of the buildings and moving them somewhere else because of the way the urban sprawl of Raleigh was encroaching on the property and making it not so pleasant to live there, I thought, well, I've always considered this a good subject for a movie, this place. Now it's now or never. I have to do it now.
Well, it's a remarkable story and remarkably well told wherever it might be located, but is there anything about North Carolina? I mean, that the place certainly is a character in the film. Anything special about North Carolina that you think makes this an exceptional film?
You know, they always say that Southern artists are noted for a sense of place, and I think that Southern artists are very rooted in where they come from. I think that the awareness that people have of their history is a big part of what I like about it. And, of course, it's a complex history. It's not just sort of a seamless story of good things. But it is, I think, a wonderful place, and I think it's becoming better as it goes along. So it's, you know, we're reflecting on that history in my film from a point of view that's really very fond and loving.
Yeah, let me say, I think, first off, this is a really fantastic and important documentary, and it's about the modernization of the South, and it's about the history of the South, and it's about race, and it's about family, and it's about place. But it's also part of a much larger, a very important tradition in North Carolina of documentary filmmaking that has been largely fostered by, you know, what's now the Full Frame Documentary Festival that takes place in Durham every year. And we have tremendous documentary filmmakers working in this state and have for many years. And so I think it's really important to remember that there's the theatrical commercial productions, and then there's people making documentary films, which often have very limited theatrical runs, but are equally interesting and important, and often much more about North Carolina.
And one thing Southerners always pride themselves on is their storytelling. And a film like this really accentuates that link between personal history and the larger history of the area, which makes it ripe for a whole lot of different conversations.
But when you think about it, too, it's interesting that so many are made here, and also the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke.
Right.
You know, documentaries are often rooted in place. I mean, it's a story about a place. And it's so interesting that the infrastructure and the creative talent would find itself here. And then once you have the talent here, you recognize how many great stories there are right under your feet.
And there's also, I think, an important tradition of first-person documentary storytelling in North Carolina, that it's just not people making documentaries about a kind of third-person thing. Right. But as in Godfrey's case, this is about his family, and it happens to be it's a personal story, but it's also a very public history, political story.
Back to feature films now, one that was very popular and shot in the North Carolina mountains, The Last of the Mohicans.
My name is Susanna Blanchard, and I currently live in Hickory, North Carolina. My favorite film that was filmed in North Carolina is Last of the Mohicans. The sweeping views of that movie really allow the audience to get a realistic idea of the grandeur of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Even though the movie focuses on the Mohicans, which aren't originally from this area, Western North Carolina has a deep and rich history with Cherokee Indians, and indeed there is an area of North Carolina called Cherokee where a number of the original Cherokee tribe in that area dug in their heels and refused to leave. They refused to be forced marched to Oklahoma, where they were ultimately put on a reservation, and they instead said, "This is our land. You can't force us off of it, and we are going to stay." Plus, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis. You can't argue with Daniel Day-Lewis. And the "I Will Find You" scene is probably one of the most romantic, swoon-worthy scenes in any movie ever.
The worst happens. Only one of us survives, something of the other does, too.
Joe, just stay alive. If they don't kill you, they'll take you north up to Huron land. You survive! You stay alive no matter what occurs! I will find you! No matter how long it takes, no matter how far! I will find you!
Last of the Mohicans, one of the favorites chosen by listeners today as we're looking at movies on the radio, films made in North Carolina. Of course, one of the most recent films shot in North Carolina was a popular pick with listeners.
Now, the time has come for us to select one courageous young man and woman for the honor of representing District 12 in the 74th Annual Hunger Games. As usual, ladies first. Primrose Everdeen.
Prim! Prim! Stop! Volunteer! I volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
This, of course, is a very popular series of books and films originally meant for young adults, but certainly read with enjoyment by lots of different people about a post-apocalyptic world in which young people are in a gladiatorial combat, which is a little off-putting once mm-hmm. again, but is extremely popular and has created a whole tourist industry in Western North Carolina because many of the standing sets are actually still in existence. I think people go to see them. The History Museum has one of Katniss Everdeen's costumes on display, so that people who love these books and reread them over and over again can make it kind of an immersive fan experience.
Well, and both of these last two films that we've heard clips from, you know, are shot in the western part of the state. And, you know, again, that kind of synergy between this commercial industry that's making these images and circulating them to so many people, and then that brings people in to visit the state. I mean, you can see the perfect synergy of that here.
Yeah, while the Hunger Games, the theme might not be anything that attracts you to North Carolina. It is truly the beauty, and once people figure that out and they say, wow, this is a beautiful state, why don't we go there and take a look at those mountains?
And I know that one of the films that North Carolina missed filming, which was Cold Mountain, written by Charles Frazier, which of course was set in Western North Carolina and ended up being filmed in Romania because they evidently had even better tax breaks.
That's right. And if, God knows if the food is as good, though. That's one of the things you gotta always remember.
Gotta like cabbage.
All right. Marcia, what was your pick?
Well, I wanted to do a clip from Junebug, Phil Morrison's film from 2005. And something really interesting happened to me in the state of North Carolina in the 2000s, which is there was this crop of filmmakers making these films that were not, you know, they're not Hunger Games scale. But I'm thinking in particular about Phil's work, about Tim Kirkman did a really nice film called Loggerheads. And David Gordon Green did a couple of lovely films, George Washington being one of my favorite, that came out in 2000. And these are films that are so rooted in the idea of place, the idea of North Carolina as home, people changing and evolving and people being stuck. And so so this is a clip with Amy Adams, this very comedic clip. What has happened is this North Carolina boy has brought his Chicago wife home for the first time to meet his family. And Amy Adams plays the sister-in-law.
What makes you tick?
All we got's dry cereal for you.
That's fine, Pat. Can I do anything to help?
Oh, no, No, nobody messes in my kitchen.
Oh, okay. Oh, Pat, your little ceramic thing, it really
Are you wearing any makeup? Because you could wear more if you wanted to. You're so tall. I'm fair. But I like to experiment with a lot of different looks. Were you born in Chicago? I was born right here, lived here my whole life. My favorite animal is the meerkat. Do you know what they are? They're so cute. Oh, I've got this little charm bracelet with meerkats on it. Do you have lots of boyfriends? I bet you did. Did you ever try out for cheerleading or anything? I tried out, but I didn't make it.
I was born in Japan.
You were not.
It's a very endearing character, very lovingly depicted in with a script written by Angus McLaughlin, who I understand is having his first feature film as a director coming out. But and it really captures aspects of rural North Carolina and art and culture that in ways that I think are really quite lovely.
And also it was a star-making role for Amy Adams,
yes,
too. And just because the relative number of people that have seen Junebug as compared to one of her big films doesn't mean that this was a very important starting place for what's become a major film career.
No, I absolutely love that film. I think it's a great film. And you're right. There's something very North Carolina about it, this sense of identity, of place. I mean, it was all about sort of where these identities come from, outsider art, what's outside, what's inside, what's art, who are you, you know?
Right.
Can you be this list of qualities that that the character would like to, you know, that Amy Adams' character wants to list? But then there's something so authentic about, that's it. The ideas cross match so beautifully in this film. And there's something very North Carolina about that.
Very North Carolina about it. And the idea, I mean, of how important that sense of the local and the place is, and what happens when you leave it, and what parts of it do you retain, and what parts become alien to you, and how that friction can be created when you leave and then come back.
And then it's about outsiders coming into a closed society as well. Because I once said to one of my neighbors, who has a long history in the South, about how my daughter is a native born Southerner. And she said quite emphatically, not if her parents are Yankees. So it's very, very hard to feel accepted sometimes in these more closed societies.
And then did she say, bless your heart?
Bless your heart.
I'm sure she did, yes.
Yeah, what's authentic and what isn't, and who's inside and who's outside is certainly a big theme in that film. Well, we bent the rules a little bit on another selection, Marcia. Tell us about this one, Brightly.
Yeah. So this is a Ross McElwee film. This is another documentary. And as you can tell, probably I'm a big proponent of the North Carolina documentary tradition. And Ross McElwee has been making these very personal first-person documentaries with a lot of home movie footage accumulated throughout his life. And this one is just a really interesting, funny, poignant film about the history of his family and the history of the Dukes. And it's all tied into this film called Brightleaf with Gary Cooper. And anyway, it's just it's a wonderful documentary ride.
My great-grandfather, John Harvey McElwee, invented the famous Bull Durham brand of tobacco, made a fortune, but then somehow lost it all to his rival, James B. Duke. And while investigating the thorny questions surrounding my family's tobacco legacy, I learned from my cousin that there's actually a Hollywood melodrama based on the life of John Harvey McElwee. So I traveled across my home state of North Carolina, met lots of people who had their own tobacco stories to tell, and put them into a movie I decided to call Bright Leaves.
So as with Godfrey Cheshire's film, this is taking a very personal story that also has a much wider resonance, and it's about tobacco, and it's about all of the riches and all of the harm that it has caused. And obviously, tobacco is so integral to the history of this state. I mean, no tobacco, no North Carolina, right? So, and also, it's just a very kind of witty contemplation on what it would have meant if we had had a McElwee University instead of a Duke University.
Well, and Ross McElwee's first major film was Sherman's March, in which he recapitulated the Civil War by visiting a lot of his old girlfriends. And this is the sort of film project that could go so horribly, horribly wrong. And as someone who screens for Full Frame, I can tell you I've seen many, many worse versions of the story. But because of his voice and his sense of humor, the sense of humor of his ex-girlfriends as well, makes it a really meaningful personal document.
It's also a place, North Carolina, where complicated stories, where we're kind of used to telling the complicated story. That tobacco is a good thing and it's a bad thing, and race is a complicated story here. And I've never heard it told so well and so completely, not entirely completely, but with as much honesty or integrity and a will to hear all sides of the story as I have, you know, here in North Carolina. So I guess those kind of documentaries are meant for this state.
Yeah, it's interesting, I mean, to think about the kind of openness with which some of these filmmakers have approached their own personal histories, because as Godfrey pointed out in his comments, I mean, it's a very difficult thing to actually bring the camera into your own family, and especially when the histories of people in the state are so thorny. They are so, if people have been in the state for a long time, they have had slavery in their family one way or another. I mean, so these histories are so complicated. And so I think that kind of desire to tell those stories and not to feel a sense of shame about it, but to feel a sense of reflection is really key.
And I think also, for some reason, North Carolina's history seems to be different from other southern states. That kind of self-reflection comes more easily to people here. I had someone explain it to me once who had spent a lot of time in Richmond, Virginia, that somehow Richmond just seemed more Confederate, and there wasn't a willingness to examine history, both personal and political, in Virginia the way there is in North Carolina.
You wonder how much that is a kind of a chicken-egg situation, though, that the willingness to talk openly about things creates a culture in which the complicated stories that we have aren't as lethal because people are more willing to talk about them and have been for a long time. We certainly have had political figures in here in this state who have been terribly complicated. I mean, to imagine
Jesse Helms, perfect example,
becomes a senator when Jim Hunt becomes governor. The same people were at the polls. The same people were at the polls voting for both Jesse Helms and Jim Hunt.
This is the state's split personality, which makes it so interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Tim Kirkman, who I mentioned earlier, who did Loggerheads, did a documentary called Dear Jesse, which is a kind of first-person contemplation on Jesse Helms' impact on the state, and particularly with regard to homosexuality.
When you have a governor like Terry Sanford, who a week after George Wallace in Alabama says segregation now and segregation forever, makes a speech and says we have to end segregation now in North Carolina a week apart, again, you've got this complicated story in the state of North Carolina. Documentary infrastructure, we're going to talk about tax incentives in a more robust way in a few minutes, but I want to talk now about whether or not you think that will be affected in the same way that feature filmmaking, because we've talked about the fact that, you know, documentaries is pretty strong territory for that.
Well, I think the tax incentives are really such a bigger budget issue, that to my mind will not have the impact on documentary production, which is, you know, always a much more kind of complicated funding structure, especially for people who are not, you know, in the Errol Morris kind of pantheon of filmmakers who can make a documentary, get theatrical exhibition, and make a lot of money on them. So I think one of the fantastic things about North Carolina is that we do have things like Full Frame and the Center for Documentary Studies that encourage people to make films, to have a venue for them in the documentary tradition. We have things like the Southern Documentary Fund that helps people fundraise for their films. And so these are typically much smaller scale budgets, and this is not The Hunger Games, your average documentary.
And also, Hollywood location people are looking for, they're not looking to tell a personal story. They're looking for a more general environment. So they can film Homeland in Charlotte because it is more of a generic big city kind of background, and they can pretend that it's whatever city that they like. And if the film incentives disappear, then they can find another city that will match their criteria.
But I do think it's important that one of the reasons that film has been able to thrive in the state is that we have trained and encouraged the training of students of all sorts and people working in the industry to be able to work on these productions. I mean, of course, personnel does come in from out of state, but
these are full-time people dedicated to the film industry.
And School of the Arts has turned out a lot of people who are...
Many. Some of the names we've mentioned here already.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, a lot of the universities, including my own, have a film program. And so we are training people that have the potential to work in an industry if that industry is still here to work in.
Marcia Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State University. Laura Boyes, film curator at North Carolina's Museum of Art. And Movies on the Radio continues on the state of things in a moment. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. It is Movies on the Radio, talking about films shot right here in North Carolina. And I spoke with somebody who just completed a film, David Burris, and he told us about an upcoming movie that he did, The World Made Straight.
It is a film. We shot it up in North Carolina, western North Carolina, around Asheville, Marshall, Weaverville area. It's an adaptation of a Ron Rash novel.
North Carolina author, we should point out.
North Carolina author Ron Rash. He teaches up at Western Carolina. Old family friend, actually, but we just met within the last few years. And we finished shooting, editing, and it's going to be released in January of 2015.
All right, so why Western North Carolina as the location?
The story was set in Western North Carolina, and the historical events that were an elemental part of the novel also took place in North Carolina. So for me, just to sort of achieve the authenticity that I felt the story deserved, I wanted to shoot it on the ground where it took place. So for the other producers and myself, we felt it was very important to shoot in Buncombe County and Marshall County. I mean, Madison County.
Well, what are the, you know, because there are a lot of films that were set places and they end up at Universal Studios getting shot there. So what are the benefits then? I mean, apart from the authenticity, okay, you feel like it's really going to look much better to be shot there. Are there any other benefits or challenges of shooting a film in North Carolina?
Well, look, you know, I'm a film director and a storyteller, so, you know, there's an aspect of me that is very practical, and there's an aspect of me that is a hopeless romantic. So there's certainly the romantic aspects of shooting in the place and the belief that creatively you're going to get the best performances out of the actors, the best visuals on film on location. Practically, there are great benefits to shooting in places like Western North Carolina. The cost of doing business there would be considerably less than shooting in Los Angeles on a soundstage. There's, you know, certainly with the tax incentive that was in place in 2013 when we shot, that was a huge advantage. I'm not even sure that we could have been able to do the film without that tax incentive in place.
So without the tax incentive, you might not have done it in North Carolina.
Yeah, we may have had to shoot Virginia from North Carolina or Georgia from North Carolina or Louisiana from North Carolina, which, as a North Carolinian, is just a terrible thing to have had.
That actually doesn't work for any of us. But I understand how it would work for you because you've got a budget. You are a North Carolinian, a North Carolina native. And how does that not how does that influence your decision to shoot here, but do you think it had any influence on you as a filmmaker and a producer?
Absolutely. North Carolina is a storytelling, it's storytelling territory for sure. And it certainly affected the types of stories I was looking for. And we're a garrulous lot in North Carolina. We love sitting around the campfire or in the living room or on the back porch telling stories. And absolutely no question that influenced me in my career and basically the choices I made in terms of what I was going to do with my life.
Dave, good to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
Dave Burr is talking about his upcoming movie, The World Made Straight, which I guess debuts here pretty soon, huh?
Yeah, well, as I understand it, the North Carolina Museum of History is working on the North Carolina premiere of the film in conjunction with the exhibit in early 2015. I don't think the date is settled yet, but I'm sure you can check the website. But I think one of the things that's interesting apropos of what Dave is saying is obviously the film industry, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of you're on a soundstage, you don't know you're there, one location subbing for another. But I also think there is this desire that people have to have a certain fidelity and an authenticity of place, in particular when shooting these kind of more intimate pictures. And, you know, it's very different than The Hunger Games when you talk about something like, as I understand, The World Made Straight is going to be. And so I think to encourage that whenever possible, to have that kind of homegrown representation is, I think it's just very important.
And I think there is a pride when you see North Carolina on the screen as well. Perhaps I've mentioned before one of my guilty pleasures is Sleepy Hollow, which is filmed around Wilmington, and it's supposed to be in upstate New York. But yet they film it in Wilmington, and every time I see a distinctively North Carolina building representing something in Tarrytown, I'm just really happy. It gives me a sense of native pride.
And it's also something about, you know, when someone like Dave Burris is making a film as a North Carolinian about North Carolina, I think there's a kind of honesty to that representation that a lot of people have looked at the South from the outside, and y'all have heard those accents. They're so bad,
uh-huh.
And the characters are so inauthentic. And then, so I think when we do have the opportunity to have our homegrown filmmakers or people who have lived here for a period of time make films in the state about the state, obviously that's a benefit to all of us who live here.
Dave Burris mentioned something. He sort of said it in passing, but among the list of reasons why you might want to do it here, he mentioned the actors have a deeper sense of the place. And I kind of wonder if that's true. I mean, in other words, professional actors should be able to, you know,
yeah,
kind of bring it wherever. But to what extent do they, as humans, absorb the place? And does that make their performance even that much better?
Well, I think it depends on the actor, for
yeah,
one thing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I have no doubt whatsoever that Daniel Day-Lewis completely, immersed himself in whatever North Carolina authenticity there was to offer. But it
which
it
might
can't,
mean you gain 30 pounds.
But it can't help but influence every actor to really experience what it would be like to be here.
Well, behind the films we enjoy with our popcorn and soda, of course, a complex industry. We've been talking about that. And it's, of course, in a business, right? I mean, I talked to Todd Labrowski, who has been in the industry for a long time, and I asked him, why North Carolina?
Well, I started in the film business here in Wilmington back in the early 90s when they were shooting Matlock. You know, I think it was about 1991 or two. I started, you know, as an extra on Matlock and actually was sitting in the jury there and did extra work for about a year. And then after that, I asked for a job from one of the assistant directors and, you know, I got a job as a set production assistant, and then for the next 10 years, I worked on basically every movie of the week and feature film that was filmed in the area. And 10 years later, I got in the Directors Guild and was a second assistant director, a second assistant director, and a first assistant director. And then I got into the producing and line production and management, production management, and then later started my company. So the reason I'm telling you that is, you know, over a good amount of years, you know, this was my production base and the hub and the primary source of my income. So, you know, North Carolina film means a lot to me because this is where I learned the ropes, and, you know, it was my primary source of income for myself and for my family for many, many years.
I saw you in that Matlock, by the way. And
no, you
had guilty, yes.
I was
and you,
so far in
no,
the back.
No, you were third guy from the right on the back. And you had guilty written all over your face. I knew. So here's the thing. You talked about going there. There was a job. There were shows. You're an actor. I mean, but really, quite honestly, you're going to go where the work is, right? Does it matter that it's North Carolina? I mean, what about the state? What about Wilmington is particular? If it uproots and goes somewhere else, you're going to go where the work is, right?
There's numerous reasons. Number one, you have a fantastic crew base in North Carolina, and it's deep, too. And what I mean by deep is, you know, you've got several layers of people to choose from, so you can actually have multiple production shooting in the state at the same time and still get the quality of crew that you would get in New York and Los Angeles, basically. You've got some real veterans here that, you know, have been working even longer than I have. You know, I started in the 90s, but there's people who've been here, you know, since the 70s and the 80s, you know, that have really extensive resumes. So that's number one. And, you know, number two, you know, going into the film incentive, you know, up until now, we've been able to get 25% back from the state on qualified expenditures. Now, for an independent filmmaker like myself, that's a pretty large sum of money that we're able to use for the financing of the picture. So that was very enticing to an independent, you know, filmmaker and a producer and production companies and, you know, companies in Los Angeles that you know, work with tax incentives. You know, that's a substantial amount of money that's coming back to the production. So, you know, that's something that lures the production to come to the particular state. You know, and now it seems as though, you know, somebody just had set their mind on destroying that base that we had and that incentive that we had. You know, I can go either way on the discussion, you know, because I certainly understand fiscal responsibility as a producer and as a production company owner. But it seems to me like there was just little dialogue being done.
That was Todd Labrowski talking about his experience as a filmmaker here in North Carolina. And, of course, tax incentives is, you know, part of the big issue. We've lost them, and apparently the industry is beginning to flee already.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Todd, and, you know, he was saying that the next few films he's working on are all going out of state, and that was not the case for him in recent history. And so, you know, I'm not in production. You know, I'm a film historian by trade, but I see and I'm hearing these conversations, and it's the same thing over and over again, and it does not seem to be good news for our potential at luring productions here in the next year.
something else he said, again, in passing, he said, we get a rebate on or a refund for qualified expenditures. And this is key. So we looked into this and talked more about it. It got a little technical. But let me just say that the way it was structured in the state of North Carolina, not everything they spent on, not every dollar they spent was qualified. Only money that they spent in the state for state vendors. And this is not how all tax structures and incentives are structured. So in other states, there's a way that the company can play a little bit of a shell game and the money actually goes back to investors. Can't do that here. They really structured it very rigidly originally when the legislature way back when set these up. And so the money was actually spent in the state, and that's the revenue that's being lost. We talked to Dave Burris about this, about tax incentives as well.
You know, America doesn't exactly have a surplus of jobs-producing industries, and the film and TV industry is one of those. And I just don't understand why North Carolina would not want to take place of that. You know, it employs people from all social levels and backgrounds. It brings downstream business like technology and hospitality, benefits the travel industry. And, you know, with that Hollywood pie being divvied up around the country, it just seems to me like North Carolina would want to take advantage of that.
And he acknowledged that the business is going to happen. It's going to happen somewhere else if North Carolina doesn't have the environment for the film industry.
I'm a filmmaker. I'm going to make films wherever I can make them. But as a North Carolinian who wants North Carolina to prosper economically and business-wise and culturally, I would really hate to see North Carolina miss out on this opportunity. It's billions of dollars have been flowing outside of Los Angeles and Hollywood in the entertainment industry, and I would really like to see North Carolina get a little bit of that.
Well, apparently it's going back to Los Angeles now.
Well, you know, Hollywood is in many ways this country's greatest export. And if you're talking about a film like The Hunger Games or Iron Man 3 or various other big blockbuster films that were made here, the face of North Carolina is watched in China and India and in you know, South America, Australia, everywhere. They see what North Carolina looks like, and you know, we benefit from this.
I mean, you can't pay for that kind of advertising.
Yeah,
it's part
absolutely
of the lesson
true.
Here. And also, I mean, I think as Dave points out, that the downstream businesses, I mean, when a film is being shot, I mean, there's a difference between like a hub like Wilmington where people are coming, you know, kind of constantly. But, you know, when a, you know, a Western North Carolina location, all of the businesses that benefit locally, I mean, there is this local aspect. I mean, there's been so much of that buy local, slow food and all of that stuff. And you could say the same for filmmaking in that, you know, when you keep these jobs in the state, the ripple effects are tremendous. And when you lose them, we will also see the ripple effects.
Because filmmakers, they need catering. They need lumber. They need
costuming and cars and places to stay.
They need things that people in North Carolina can provide.
And of course, when you're recruiting businesses, I mean, it doesn't hurt to say, yeah, that's where they shot The Hunger Games. Let me show you that. Well, here's they did Bull Durham. Let me drive you over there, and you can do the tour. And that does.
Because people want
recruiting.
To see it.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about this exhibit now. North Carolina Museum of History is celebrating North Carolina in film. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this exhibit starring North Carolina, which Laura and I toured a couple weeks ago, it's a really nicely done, comprehensive exhibit about the history of film production and exhibition in the state of North Carolina. And it deals, you know, with a lot of productions that were made here, a lot of North Carolina directors, a lot of the history of theaters in various parts of the state, you know, things like segregation in film theaters in North Carolina. And it's very interactive and play. I mean, I think young people are really going to enjoy some of the interactive elements of the exhibition. And there's a lot to learn from it.
It goes back to the silent era. So it talks about productions that were made, you know, almost 100 years ago. It talks about people like H. Lee Waters, who came to different towns in North Carolina and filmed local residents. It talks about some of our local treasures like Skip Elsheimer of AV Geeks. It talks about Ross McElwee's brother, John McElwee, who's a very important collector and historian of movie history. Some of the interactive things, you get a chance to read some film dialogue from your favorite North Carolina film and you know, see what you look like on camera. And there are so many props from so many movies, so many costumes. It's really a completist exhibition.
I mean, this is a huge exhibition. So it is really worth, I think, going and spending a day.
And everybody can learn something. I did not know Julianne Moore was from Fayetteville until I went to this exhibit.
There you go. You learn something every day. And if not, they're here on the State of Texas. With Laura Boies, the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, and Marcia Gordon, film professor at NC State. Thank you both once again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
We've got more details about the movie exhibit at the North Carolina Museum of History and, of course, the films we talked about all at our website, stateofthings.org. That's our program. Thanks for listening. The program is called The State of Things. The website, stateofthings.org. It is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Alex Curley is our intern. Robin Copley, technical director. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.